The oldest member.
Listen to the tale of a stalwart male who lost his well-known nanny. Donald was his name, and golf was the game that made him gray like his granny. He practiced much, but his style.
Morris Denham, as the oldest member, tells another tale by P.G. Woodhouse. Today, The Long Home.
Nothing else than dirty in the locker room every night. He'd sing of his awful plight. Oh, the dirty little bill went rolling down the hill and roll right into a bunker. From there to the green.
Prior's Heath Golf Club in the 30s. A peaceful, genial place. But even here, passions can sometimes flare. Witness the young man who has just stormed into the smoking room and hurled himself into an armchair opposite the oldest member.
If there's one thing that gives me a pain in the gizzard, it's a golf lawyer. They shouldn't be allowed on the links.
Oh, come. The law is an honourable profession. Sometimes even an honest one.
Oh, I don't mean actual lawyers, solicitors and such. I mean golf lawyers, blighters whose most used club is the rule book. You know the sort of excrescence. Just when you think you've won a hole, they quote Rule 853, Section 2, Subsection 4, claim you're disqualified for whistling.
You've had an unhappy experience.
I have. I was out with that man Hemingway. Oh, just a friendly round, nothing at stake except a measly ball. And there I was, going well on the seventh, when he pulled me up.
Huh?
Claimed the hole, simply because I dropped my niblick in the bunker. Oh, well, a tick's a tick, and there's nothing more to say, I suppose.
On the contrary, my boy, there's much more to say. Now, rules are rules and must be kept. Yeah, it's odd that you should have raised this subject. I was only just now recalling to myself a match which turned upon this sort of thing. I shall be pleased to tell you about it.
Well, you know, I've had a pretty rotten afternoon
already.
I call
my tale The Long Hole, but it involved the playing of what was probably the longest hole in golf history.
The thing is, I half promised to go and see a man about
I shall begin at the very beginning, but I see that you're impatient to hear the details. The story concerns two members of this club, Arthur Jukes and Ralph Bingham. They'd never got on well, but it was when Amanda Trivett came to Prior's Heath that their smouldering distaste for each other burst into actual enmity. After Miss Trivett's arrival, being in the same room with the two men was like dropping in on a reunion of Capulets and Montagues. You see, each had taken a fancy to the fair newcomer and expected her to reciprocate, and each was baffled when she failed to do so. Friendly as she was to both, actual love light was conspicuously absent from her beautiful eyes. Both Jukes and Bingham were handsome fellows and well aware of the fact. It might not be quite fair to call them arrogant, but it's a risk I shall have to take. To the two men, their failure to make progress with Amanda was surely due to only one thing. Clearly, they cancelled each other out. Neither could get the girl alone. If Jukes took her flowers, he'd collide on her doorstep with Bingham bearing a similar tribute. If Bingham called with a book he felt Miss Trivett might enjoy, he'd find the place already cluttered up with Jukes. For years, the men had been rivals at golf, both of equal ability and both strong players. Indeed, there were times when they were almost as good as they thought they were. Now they found themselves rivals in romance, and this was something neither could tolerate. Thus it was that I came home one evening to find Bingham waiting to see me. My man had let him in and laid him on the mat in my sitting room. I offered him a cigar, and he came to the point with commendable speed.
I have to tell you that Prior's Heath is too small for both Arthur Jukes and myself.
Ah, you've been talking it over and decided to move. Well, I think you're wise. The area is overbuilt. Men like you and Jukes need space. Where do you think you're going?
Well, I'm not thinking of going.
I thought you said you were.
I meant that the time has come when one of us must leave.
Oh, only one of you.
I catch a hint of disappointment. Surely you won't mind the Duke's going?
Oh, why, certainly not. He really is going, is he?
He is. He thinks he isn't, but he is.
I don't understand.
I suppose you've noticed the disgusting way Jukes has been hanging around Amanda Trivett, boring her to death.
Well, I have seen them together sometimes.
Well, I love Miss Trivett.
Ah, poor girl.
I beg your pardon?
The poor girl to have Arthur Jukes hanging around her.
That's just what I think. And that's why we're having this match.
What match?
Well, this match we're having.
Ah.
The thing is, I want you to be one of the judges. Go along with Jukes and see he doesn't play any of his tricks. You know what he is. And we can't have any skullduggery in a match as vital as this.
Oh, you're playing for high stakes?
We are playing for the whole world.
I beg your pardon.
It amounts to that. The loser is to leave Prior's Heath for good. The winner stays on and courts Amanda Trivett.
I see.
We've arranged all the details. Rupert Bailey's be one judge, and he'll accompany me.
And you want me to go round with Jukes, hmm?
Not round. Along.
What is the distinction?
We shall not be playing a whole round. We're to play just one hole.
A sudden death, eh?
Not very sudden, actually. It's to be a longish hole. We start on the first tee here, and finish up in the town.
In the town?
In Flimbridge. The actual hole is in the doorway of the Majestic Hotel in Royal Square, a distance of some 16 miles across country.
I was revolted. A perfect epidemic of freak matches had recently broken out in the club, and I'd strongly opposed them from the start. George Willis had begun it by playing a middle round with the pro, George's first nine against the pro's complete 18. After that came the contest between Herbert Widgeon and Montague Brown, the latter, an inferior player, being entitled to shout boo three times in each round at moments selected by himself. There have been many more of these degrading travesties, and I'd writhed to see them. Playing freak golf matches is, to my mind, like ragging a great classical melody. Bingham sensed my unease.
It's the only way. You know how it is with normal golf. Duke's amazing luck frequently cancels out my greater ability. This special game will eliminate luck. After 16 miles of unusual hazards, there is no doubt that I shall... That's to say, that the better man will win. May I take it that you will be a judge?
Oh, you know I don't care for these unorthodox games.
With your aid, this match will be utterly orthodox, apart from the terrain. Royal and ancient rules all the way.
Ah.
Without your involvement, all sorts of irregularities could creep in.
Well, then, I will serve you.
Excellent. We start at daybreak tomorrow.
Oh, so early?
We want to avoid publicity, so we must reach the town before it gets too crowded. If someone's ball were to hit a policeman, it might excite a remark.
Yes, I'm sure, and I can tell you the remark it would excite.
We will all take bicycles to help us cover the distance. Daybreak tomorrow, then. And please carry a copy of the rule book.
Next morning, the atmosphere at the first tee was like that at a dueling ground in the days when these things were settled by rapiers or pistols. Bailey, my fellow judge, looked dour. I'm never at my best in the early morning. And the two rivals surveyed each other with silent sneers. Till then, I'd never supposed that men really do sneer at each other outside the movies. But Jukes and Bingham wore looks so dirty they could have fallen foul of the public cleansing department. Having won the toss, Jukes drove off first and set a fine ball well down the course. Ralph Bingham, having placed his ball on the tee, now turned to Rupert Bailey.
Bailey, would you be so good as to move to the 17th hole? I need you on the fairway there to mark my ball.
You are aiming your ball at the 17th hole?
Certainly. The object is to get to Flimbridge as quickly as possible, is it not?
But if you take that course, your second or third shot will surely land in the lake.
I have provided for that. I have a flat-bottomed boat moored by the 17th green. I shall use a mashie niblick to chip my ball aboard, row across to the other side, and then chip it ashore. From there, a decent drive should take me into Woodfield Village. I think that should save me quite a few strokes.
I gasped at Bingham's devilish cunning. Jukes had already embarked on a lengthy passage of Prior's Heath's golf course. Thence he would have to go round the lake as far as Nutley Bridge. Bingham's plan cut off two sides of the triangle. Jukes was an unpleasant young man, almost, it seems absurd to say so, but almost as unpleasant as Bingham. Yet, at that moment, I have to say, I sympathize with him. Initially stunned by Bingham's audacity, he now uttered a violent protest.
What the devil do you think you're doing? You can't play fast and loose with the rules.
To what rule do you refer?
Hazards. That infernal boat of yours is a hazard, and you can't row a hazard about all over the place.
Why not?
Why not? Why not? Well, you can't, that's why.
There is nothing in the rules against the moving of hazards, if it can be done without disturbing the ball. Are our judges aware of any rule to the contrary?
No.
Besides, I'm entitled to go for a morning row, am I not? I'm sure my doctor would recommend it. I shall row my boat across the Sound for exercise. If it happens to have my ball on board, that is irrelevant. I shall not disturb my ball, and I shall play it from where it lies. Am I right in saying that is what the rules require?
Yes, I suppose so.
Right, let us waste no more time. Bailey and I will wait for you at Woodfield. Now then, ball on the tee, breeze from the left, and away we go.
Full of confidence, Bingham drove his ball high over the trees, and then he cycled briskly off towards the 17th hole. Jukes and I pushed our bikes down the hill. He faced a long haul to cross the course and reach the road. But there was something in the dogged way he struggled against adversity which won my grudging support. Having been so outmaneuvered at the start, many men would have given up, but not Jukes. He hacked his way on, no doubt inspired by visions of the fair Amanda. At last we reached the high road in only 27, and Jukes began to drive his ball towards Woodfield. I was able to mount my bicycle, and the morning started to take on a rosy hue. In the pellucid air all seemed strangely beautiful. Even Arthur Jukes' heather mixture knickerbockers, of which hitherto I'd never approved. As he bent to make his shots, the sun gleamed on their seat in a cheerful and almost poetic way. The birds were singing in the hedgerows, and in my uplifted state, I too burst into song. Alas, my vocal efforts were short-lived. Jukes said that while he yielded to no man in his love of farmyard impressions, their impact just now was putting him off his stroke. So, I desisted. And thereafter we went about our business in silence. The fellow was not doing badly. In the main, he used his putter, keeping his shot straight, which on the road was preferable to distance. At last, we reached the slope that descends into Woodfield High Street, and peering ahead, I perceived the opposition waiting for us as promised. Bingham was leaning on his bicycle in the roadway, smoking a cigarette. And even from afar, one could detect the man's appalling complacency. My fellow judge, Rupert Bailey, leant against the door of the Woodfield garage, looking rather used up. He seemed to be scraping mud off his face. And I later learned that he had fallen into a ditch as they made their way across country. Jukes now broke the silence.
I think I might try my brassy again here. I have a good lie.
Oh, is that wise? With this slope, there's no need for an air shot.
No, but it occurred to me that I might wing that blighter Bingham. As you see, he is standing in the middle of the fairway.
Oh, come, come. While the rules do not expressly forbid maiming an opponent, it's probably not within the spirit of the game.
You may be right. Besides, the ball might run wild. I'll stick to my putter.
And thus we proceeded, a mere four more strokes bringing us down the hill and up with the opposition.
Ah, you're here at last. We're playing shot 310. How are you?
9, 10, 11. Mr. Jukes has played 711.
Perhaps you'd like to give up the match, Jukes. You might just as well. I mean, you can't win now, can you?
Jukes was not a great conversationalist at the best of times, and this was far from the best of times. The rivals stood glaring at each other. Rupert Bailey had said nothing, being mainly concerned with removing alluvial deposits from his person. But now he drew me aside on the pretext of a judge's conference. His verdict was simple.
I'm going home.
Oh, nonsense, man, you can't. You're here in an official capacity. You must stick to your post. Besides, what could be nicer than a pleasant morning ramble?
Pleasant ramble, my number 9 foot. I want to get back to civilization. I need a dozen navvies with shovels to get this mud off.
Oh, you look too much on the gloomy side. You're a little dusty, that's all.
I've been buried alive. And furthermore, I cannot abide Ralph Bingham much longer.
Ah, you find him trying.
Trying? Man, he's more trying than a sick headache. When I fell in that ditch and was coming up for the third time, all he did was ask me to admire his last iron shot. I had no help, oh no, no sympathy.
As I have observed that the milk of human kindness is somewhat curdled in Bingham's case.
Tell your man to give up the match. He can't win now.
No, I refuse to admit that. Much may happen between here and Royal Square. I've seldom known a prophecy so swiftly fulfilled. Even as I spoke, the doors of the Woodfield garage opened, and a small green car staggered out. A young man in a grimy sweater alighted and went back into the garage, leaving the car perspiring by the curb. Bailey, Bingham and I paid little heed to this event, but suddenly there was a cry of triumph from Jukes. I looked up to see his ball looping neatly into the car's interior. Jukes himself was brandishing his niblick and dancing about with glee.
Can't win, eh? We'll see about that.
What the deuce is he up to?
I say, you there. Are you the owner of this automobile?
That's right, Gav. Little beauty, ain't she?
I'll give you £5 to drive me to Royal Square, Flimbridge.
What? Now?
At once.
For £5? Right, you're on. Hop in.
Well, well, Jukes, I suppose you think you're darned clever.
Not exactly. I know I am.
Then just tell me this. How do you propose to get the ball out of the car when you reach Royal Square?
Quite easily. On the side of the vehicle, you can see a handle. When turned, this opens the door. Once that is done, I shall chip my ball through.
I see. Yes, I never thought of that.
There was something in the way Bingham spoke that I didn't like. He had the air of a man with something up his sleeve. I was still pondering this when Jukes bade me get in the car, and we drove off. Jukes was now in great spirits. He'd ascertained from our driver that no other cars in the garage were usable that day, and Bingham had no hope of getting transport. And here we were, roaring towards the finishing line. Yet I was uneasy, and said so. I don't like it.
Don't like what?
Bingham's manner.
Of course not. No one does. There have been complaints on all sides.
I mean, when you told him how you planned to expel your ball...
What was wrong?
Well, he was too...
How do you mean he was too...
I have it.
What?
Yeah, I see. I see the trap he's laid for you.
Trap?
Ah, no wonder he didn't object when you spoke of opening the door and chipping the ball out. By doing so, you would forfeit the match.
Forfeit the match? Why?
Because you would have tampered with a hazard, and that's against the rules.
But, Then what about him rowing his blasted boat?
Ah, he merely moved a hazard, which is allowed. It's opening the car door which would cost you the game.
But, look, if I don't open the door, how the deuce do I get the ball out?
What is that, my dear fellow, is a question between you and your maker.
Listen, we shan't see the others for a while. Supposing, during that time, the door sort of accidentally swung open and the ball rolled out. A bump in the road, perhaps. You would confirm it was an accident, wouldn't you?
Good grief, man. What are you saying? I am a golfer and I obey the rules.
But look here.
These rules were laid down by the Committee of the Royal and Ancient at St. Andrews. I've always obeyed them to the letter and I always shall.
I thought you were my friend.
I can't think what gave you that impression. Well, after that, no more was said till we reached Royal Square. Jukes had the driver park outside the Majestic Hotel. He then embarked on the Herculean task of trying to propel his ball from the car. It was still early, but a small crowd quickly gathered, drawn by the spectacle of a man in golf coat and knickerbockers hacking with a niblick at the floor of a car. They were soon audibly speculating on which asylum had had the honour of sheltering Jukes before his escape. Irked by this, Jukes showed some presence of mind. He pressed some money into our driver's hand and some words into his ear, and the man disappeared into a nearby printer's shop. He soon emerged with a poster which Jukes hung on the side of the car. This proclaimed,
"Come to Mackenzie and Burke, 18 West Street, for all golfing supplies."
Well, naturally, once the mob thought this was an advertising stunt, they refused to look and soon dispersed. Jukes toiled on in solitude. At 9 o'clock, he played his 1101st stroke, and yet again saw his ball crash against the inside of the car and come to rest at his feet. At this point, another weary-looking ball came trickling out of Bridal Street. It was followed by Ralph Bingham, a trifle wobbly at the knees, but still resolute.
Hello there. Well, what's your score?
1100.
1100, eh?
Should be less, but we got into a casual dog.
A casual dog?
On the bridge. Stray mutt grabbed my 910th and carried it back to Woodfield. Bailey insisted I'd play from there. What are you?
We just played our 1101st. So, a nice even game. Now, let's see. Your ball is by the curb there. Is your shot next, I think?
Sorry, old boy, but I'm not playing another stroke till I've had some breakfast.
Breakfast?
You know the game. You play it with a pot of coffee, a mound of toast, and about 100 weight of scrambled eggs.
But surely you...
Don't quibble, man. If I don't get some food inside me, I'll not be able to keep my plus fours up.
Tell you what, the rest of you go in an order. I just want to buy a paper.
Rupert Bailey was much too fond of his creature comforts, but I was surprised at Bingham's eagerness to break off when he was so close to holing out. However, I confess that once we were at table, the sight of food and drink was quite appealing. Even Jukes, after his long frustration, began to cheer up. He thought he'd now worked out how to get the ball from the car using an iron. Bingham joined us with his paper, and we were able to study the early reports from the US Open. At last, having refreshed both body and soul, we left the table and went outside. Jukes led the way and at once cried out in alarm.
It's gone.
What's gone?
The car. The car's gone. What happened to the car?
Oh, the car. Don't worry about that. I bought it, don't you know?
You bought it?
Just now. And I've engaged the driver as my chauffeur. A man should have a car, don't you think?
But where is it?
Well, somewhere between here and Glasgow. That's where I told the fellow to go. Why? Did you have a message for him?
But my ball is in that car.
Yes. Dashed awkward. Not sure what you can do about that. I'm afraid it means you lose the match.
Lose the match?
Well, of course. The rule is clear. 5 minutes are allowed for each stroke. If you fail to play in 5 minutes, you lose the match.
Jukes sank down on the path and buried his head in his hands. Outwitted at the start and at the finish, his chance with the fair Amanda Trivet now as good as gone, he seemed a broken man. Bingham, on the other hand, was unbearably smug. He announced that he might as well sink his ball as he was almost there, and studied the lie with an odious grin. Then a page boy came out of the hotel and paused to watch the proceedings. Bingham patted him on the head.
Well, sonny, what club would you use here? A putter, perhaps?
Aha! I claim the match.
I beg your pardon?
I claim the match. Rule 25. A player who asks advice from anyone other than his caddy loses the match.
But this is absurd.
I appeal to the judges.
Well, we sustain the appeal. The rule is clear.
Aye, it is.
But Jukes had already lost the match by not playing within 5 minutes.
It was not my turn to play. When we broke, you were further from the pin.
Well, play now. Go on, let's see you make your shot.
There's no need. Why should I play when you have already disqualified yourself?
I claim a draw.
I deny the claim.
I appeal to the judges.
Very well. We will leave it to the judges.
A decision of this magnitude was something neither Bailey nor I had anticipated. The happiness of two young men and the hand of Amanda Trivet seemed to depend on a nice interpretation of conflicting rules. It seemed to me that Jukes deserved the verdict, but Bailey was unable to see this. Though an honest and decent fellow, he was always one of nature's fatheads. At last, we had to admit that we couldn't agree. Bingham suggested a third judge, but it was hard to see where such a person might be found. And then, like a god out of a machine, there emerged from the hotel none other than Amanda Trivet herself. She gave us one of her dazzling smiles, and all wrangling ceased at once. Providence seemed to have provided a solution.
Gentlemen, why do we not ask Miss Trivet herself to decide this matter? We could have no better referee.
I'm game.
Suits me.
Good morning, Miss Trivet.
Good morning. Whatever are you all doing here with your golf clubs?
Well, these gentlemen are playing a match, and a point has arisen on which we need an outside opinion. Would you consent to arbitrate?
Well, I'd like to help in any way I can, but I really know very little about golf.
Well, the rules can easily be explained. We just need a common-sense view as to which rule should prevail.
No, really, I'd rather not. But if you'll wait a moment, Jack Barnes will be here. He knows everything there is to know about golf.
Who's Jack Barnes?
My fiancé. He's just back from a year in Australia, and we're to be married next month. Shall we ask him to decide, Mr. Bingham?
No. No, don't bother.
Are you sure? What do you say, Mr. Jukes?
It doesn't really matter now.
I wonder if the Majestic has any of that excellent scrambled egg left.
Listen to the tale of a stalwart male who lost his well-known natty. Donald was his name, and golf was the game that made him gray like his granny. He practiced much, but his style was such that his handicap stayed at...
The Long Hole was narrated by Morris Denham in the role of the oldest member. Jonathan Taffler was Ralph Bingham. Gordon Kane was Arthur Jukes. Sue Holderness was Amanda. And John Graham was everyone else. The Oldest Member is adapted by Edward Taylor and Michael Poynton from stories by P.G. Woodhouse and produced by Edward Taylor.
I get no fun in the air and sun, but down in the taps I labor. I swear then to weep where the sand is deep till I want to murder my neighbor.